Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
I'm Mark DeLuzio, episode 73. This was supposed to be recorded and released, I should say, on January 1st. It is now January 7th, and I'm a little bit late. We had some out-of-town guests over the holidays. They just went home yesterday, had a great holiday. And over the holidays, I had time to reflect a lot on what I do for a living and, you know, am I really making a difference? Of course, I'm only one person. Our company, Lean Horizons, is only one company. But I walked away saying, yeah, we are. But in general, my reflection on the Lean community is that we're going backwards. And we're very confused. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Okay. But I titled this particular episode, Let's Make 2026 a Year of Return to the Basics. And then as I thought about that title, which I'm going to keep that title, but so many companies I've walked into have no idea what the basics are. And I will talk about that, but they have no idea what the basics are. They think they're doing the basics, but we're distracted by a lot of different things. Now, you can argue that most companies out there, to some degree, are doing some kind of continuous improvement, whether it's Lean or Theory of Constraints or, you know, Six Sigma, Lean Sigma, whatever the heck that is. And, you know, I've talked about all these things before in previous episodes. I'm not going to beat them to death, okay? But what really is Lean, okay? And after nearly four decades of spending my life 100% dedicated to this, I'm here to tell you that, to me, Lean is all about one thing. Problem solving. Problem solving to a standard. And when we don't meet that standard, we problem solve on a priority basis. And every Kaizen I've done, as I reflected over my career, were really more problem-solving events than they were. You can call them Kaizen events if you want. That's fine. Kaizen meaning continuous improvement. And we would invoke all kinds of different tools that are necessary to achieve whatever, you know, objective we're looking for from that particular set of problems. But that, to me, is the essence of the basics of Lean. And so, okay, well, now you're saying, well, what about respect for people? What about, you know, the culture and all that? Well, first of all, if you can develop a problem-solving culture in your organization that everybody kind of thinks the same way in terms of how to solve a problem, and they all seem to ask the same questions because they are trained in doing this, then you've got a real leg up on you know, your competition and everybody else out there. So, you know, you can argue everybody's doing it, but we get so enamored with the tools. Now you might say, well, Mark, geez, you know, problem solving is a tool. Yeah, it is. It's also a mindset. It's also a mindset. And if you go to previous episodes on Lean 911, I think I have 9 modules now that talk about various aspects of problem solving. The last one being, are you a critical thinker? I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast episode fancies themselves as a critical thinker. And it's the other guy that doesn't know how to do that. Similar to, you know, people making the statement, nobody seems to have common sense. And the underlying assumption is that the person making that statement thinks they have common sense. Okay. So nobody wants to be told that they don't have problem solving skills and critical thinking skills, but it doesn't matter what your discipline is. I don't care if you're in sales, I've had engineers tell me that engineers, by definition, know how to solve problems, when in fact, they're probably the ones that cause more problems than anybody else in the company. So I look at this and say, it can be taught. Critical thinking and problem solving can be taught. It is a mindset, but you've got to train yourself to think differently. And that critical thinking module, I think it's I forget which episode it was, but a few episodes back, you'll find it. If you go to my website, lean911.com, and you'll find that critical thinking mindset probably should have been the first one on problem solving, because it really sets up the mindset that you need in order to effectively train others how to solve problems. That to me is the essence and the basics. And you guys have probably heard me a million times before say things like, talk about my first trip to Toyota in Japan in 1990, where a leader there said the difference between a world-class company and one that's not is their ability to solve problems. And he joked around and said, even the great Toyota has problems, but we only solve our problems, he said. We only solve our problems once. And that really hit home to me, okay? And to be honest, I don't think I really understood it in 1990, really what he meant back then. I was still very immature in my thinking, in my lean thinking. At that point in time, I think I had 3 years in with Shinkajitsu from Toyota. But I was a guy that had more experience than most people at Danaher. And for some reason, our CEO liked me and asked me to lead the charge for Danaher. And then the Danaher business system is what came out of that over the course of time. So problem solving to me is essential. It's absolutely essential. Now, I could spend a lot of time on this episode talking about leadership behavior and what leaders have to do and all that. And there's plenty of people out there today who write books about it and consult. Even people who've never had leadership positions are consulting on leadership, okay? But I'm not going to do that because, first of all, most likely most leaders aren't listening to this podcast. And this is kind of my issue I've had with these big conferences that people go to, and there's 1,000 people, 500 people at these conferences, and there are no decision makers there. There are people that are more in the continuous improvement roles, or maybe middle management roles, looking for, the answers as to how this all works. But sometimes you're caught between a rock and a hard place if you have a leader that doesn't want to change. We just basically fired a client. I can't tell you who they are, but poorly performing, and I know that business would have produced 35% EBITDA if it was a Danaher company. And they're only in the high teens, but they thought they were good. The top lean guy, who then became the CFO, told me, "Mark, you don't have to lecture me on lean. I know all there is about lean because I consulted for in lean for 3.5 years with McKinsey." Think about what he said. I know all there is to know about lean. I'm approaching my 40th year. And I'm still learning. I am still learning. And if you're not a consummate student in this, then and think that you know it all, okay, well, I've got news for you. You're in the wrong business. I could talk to you about how the maniacal focus on cost cutting brings us down the wrong, avenue. But I could also talk to you about if we're not cutting costs and making ourselves more efficient, we're not doing our job. I've had episodes on my Lean trilogy where I think all stakeholders have to be satisfied, starting with employees, customers, and shareholders. It's not a zero-sum game. All of these people need to be, they all need to win. So I could talk to you about that. Go back and I'm sure you'll find an episode on it somewhere. But I want to focus on my industry, the consulting industry, where I think has done more damage to the people who are trying to truly learn than not. Now, one of the advantages I had, and we had at Danaher in the early days, you know, my lean journey really started in essence in 1987. We didn't have any consulting companies out there to screw us up. We really didn't. We weren't getting confused. The one little confusion we had was the theory of constraints. And there was an episode on that. If you go back in my podcast, you'll find an episode as to why we didn't include theory of constraints in the Danaher business system. However, there weren't a lot of consultants out there to screw us up in that. Okay. Then it came along the Six Sigma fiasco. We did include Six Sigma in the Danaher business system, but it wasn't something that we worshipped on a daily basis and made a business system out of a tool. Okay. And I talk about that as well. Well, we didn't have any consultants to screw us up back then, essentially. So we learned from the guys who actually did it at Toyota, Tayashi Ono's original lieutenants. And so we adopted, you know, we were lucky in that regard, I guess. But I just don't know how anybody today could learn and be clear and not get their head so confused with all of the things that are. I made a little bit of a list here. I just sat here and made a little list about the things that got thrown out there by consulting. Okay. Once in a while, I see this thing called Factory 4.0. I have no idea what that is. No idea. As I told you, I've been doing this for, you know, close to, you know, four decades, and I don't remember seeing Factory 1.0, 2.0, or 3.0. Okay. So now there's a Factory 4.0. So if you're sitting there trying to learn and you see that fly across your LinkedIn feed, now you're saying, oh my goodness, what am I missing here? I got to go find out what Factory 4.0 is. Okay. Then comes along some other things. Gemba walks, which I've been highly critical of. I actually think Gemba walks are a big waste of time. You know, people have written books about Gemba walks. They consult on Gemba walks. And they go stand at these Gemba boards that are peppered with lagging indicators that do not help you at all in the problem-solving process. They're big dog and pony shows, and sometimes I think they're there for executives to virtual signal that they care about this stuff. So every morning we're going to go down, or every twice a week, three times a week, whatever the cadence is, and we're going to follow the leader around and do a dog and pony show about how cell number two is doing and how department number three is doing. And for the most part, I've seen Gemba walks turn into big expediting. Hey, Charlie, when is that part coming in? It'll be here at 2 o'clock, Bill. Great. We'll have that machine up and running by three, and we'll get right back on track. Hey, that's really great. That's what I see in these things. And the measures don't mean a thing. They're just one big board of measures. Now, look, I'm not saying you shouldn't measure. I'm not saying you shouldn't track things, okay? But I see Gemba walks, especially the way they're used now, as a huge distraction, okay? Toyota Kata. We've learned from the Japanese, from the originators, I said, of TPS. They never heard the word kata. Never. They kind of laughed at it when I talked to them about it. Never heard of it. Now, maybe it's something I missed. I don't know. But now, I've been to seminars where two women were displaying how kata works. So you had a supervisor and a subordinate, and her kata was to speak more in meetings. And she actually recorded on a bowling chart how many times she spoke up And she would take an EQ test to validate whether or not her EQ, emotional quotient, was increasing. I mean, I don't know what to tell you about that. I really don't know what to tell you about that. Okay? But this is what they're spending their time on. Neuroscience, trying to understand how people's brain works. Now, people have been trying to do that for centuries. Okay. And if you go into your boss and say, hey, I want to talk about neuroscience and how everybody's brain is wired, if he doesn't kick you out or she doesn't kick you out, you will soon get kicked out. Okay. If you're not talking about what is important to these leaders. But there's another distraction. Value stream mapping is another thing that, I've used it, and sometimes successfully. But the first 10 years of Danaher's transformation, we never used a value stream map, and we never got taught value stream mapping by the Japanese. Now, again, I'm not saying that Toyota didn't use value stream mapping. I know John Shook is a great guy. He's an honest guy. So maybe it's something I missed, okay? But most value stream maps I see done today are nothing more than cartoons with colored post-it notes that don't mean a thing. They do not do a lead time ladder. They do not know how to interrogate the value stream or create a future state and put a plan together. And quite frankly, now we have an episode on value streams. Most value streams are done in the context of manufacturing and not really including the enterprise. And if you're not including the enterprise, including the commercial business, the R&D, of course, the manufacturing, the procurement, and so forth, then all you're doing is an engineering activity that, fills up your time. And maybe some people walk away with a great sense of accomplishment using value streams. Now, look, I'm not saying you should never use a value stream. It is a good way to bring people together so we can come to a consensus as to what needs to be done. But just to launch off without any thought about what you're doing with the value stream is going to take you away from the essence and the basics of lean. Okay? You've heard of agile. Scrum. I mentioned the theory of constraints. My God, I mean, if I had to go through all of this and try to sort out what this all means, and this is just a partial list, by the way, I didn't include everything on here. I don't know where the heck you guys would be. I don't know where I would be, I should say. Okay. I didn't have this problem. I was fortunate from that respect. Then, of course, there are lean certifications, where you hire a lean company like Shingo to come in and certify you. Why do you care what they say? Seriously, why do you care what a third party has to say about your business? The only people you should be concerned about are your customers and your other stakeholders. And you got to remember, a lot of this is to, oh, sorry, you didn't make it this year, but hire us for a year and we'll get you back on track. And all of a sudden, you got a nice little consulting expense that you're going to have to pay to people most likely who haven't had experience with successful lean transformations. Look, I'm not trying to throw cold water on all the people that work at these companies. There are some good ones, I'm sure. But it's an industry designed to extract money from you, and it's not helpful for you. And I know many companies that got certified by these companies that went out of business a year later or got audited by the government and were shut down for 18 months. Totally missed what was going on. They won the prize, right? So I know this is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way, but I'm sorry. We're adamant that we were not going to use an outside agency to to evaluate and certify us at Danaher. We did not allow these people in our business. They're a big distraction. Okay. And many times we knew more than they did. So it wasn't even allowed because it's a distraction. I don't want you focused on the certification. I want you focused on serving your customer and hitting all your, you know, your objectives. I know you may think, well, Mark, that you're very self-serving here because you have a consulting company called Lean Horizons, right? And I'm not trying to knock any of my competition, but I would ask you to do this if you are going to hire an outside company to help you, okay? First thing I would say is, who are you working with? And what has the success rate been, not on a Kaizen, okay, but on a transformation, on a lean transformation? In order to do this right, you have to have a lot of business acumen, financial acumen, to do this correctly, okay, and to win. This is not about going whacking in a bunch of cells and all that and expecting global wonderfulness to come out of that. Everything has to be in concert. If you want to study any books or publications by academics, knock your socks off. You're going to find most academics out there have not done this. They have not done this. They will say they've done this, but then when you dig a little bit deeper and really get into what they really did, you're going to find like, how can these guys even write books about this stuff? Okay. You're going to find consultants coming out of the big consulting firms that have very little experience with hands-on transformations. They're more designed to sell static consulting packages, no matter what your problems are or no matter what the industry is. Okay. And not have multi-industry experience in a successful lean transformation. If they don't have any experience in hands-on implementation, dealing with all levels of management from the boardroom down to the janitor, you don't want to bring these people in, okay? Just don't listen to them. Don't put yourself there, okay? So let me go back to the basics and a couple words about Toyota, by the way. I made a couple posts on LinkedIn the other day before Christmas about Danaher stock performance versus Toyota. Okay, now look, I know stock performance isn't the tail of the tape in total, but they were demonstrably different, okay? When we compared ourselves way back when I was at Danaher against General Electric, with all the GE fanfare and Jack Welch and all that other crap, we blew them away. We absolutely blew them away. Okay. And the argument was, well, you know, we're a different company. Yeah, I know you're different. Just look at the stock chart. You are different. Okay. We can't copy Toyota. And we can't copy Danaher, and we can't copy any other company you want to throw on the list. But the one thing that you can copy are the fundamental principles of lean. The concept of attempt to flow, pull where you can't, never push, as a principle. The principle of just in time. So much easier said than done. The whole notion of identifying wasteful practices. I was just with a company that has a robot to pick a part out of a molding machine, injection molding machine, and just dumping it on the other side. unbelievable costs, unbelievable complexity in terms of maintenance, TPM, upkeep, just to move a part roughly 1.5 meters to drop it in a box. Unbelievable. How about a nice Hanadashi approach that just pushes the part out and it drops in the box and you don't have to worry about it? The principle of respect for people. The fundamentals of how to run a Kaizen event. The fundamentals of a framework for improvement. Are you set up to win? The true purpose of your lean office, and it's not to do projects and put points on the board like some of my clients talk about. It's not about putting points on the board. It's about teaching capabilities and growing people. You remember, machines depreciate, people appreciate, but they will wither if you don't focus on developing them in terms of the fundamental basics. So, I can go on and on about principles here. I named a couple of them. A blameless environment, where you can indict the process and not the person. Normally, when something goes wrong, it's a process that's broken, not the person. Either they weren't trained, or you didn't set them up to win. You gave them a terrible process to work with. I had a whole episode on engineers, how they spend time in their office in front of a computer system, their computer, screens, and refused to spend any time on the shop floor. I equated it to a surgeon who refuses to go to the operating room when he's operating on your child. How would you feel about that? And the notion that the engineer's job is to make the job and life of the operator easier. The focus on quality. Nobody believes. I had a big argument with a former client I just fired that did not believe the cost of poor quality could be 20 to 30% of their revenue. They had no way even counting it, first off. But the whole notion of build-in quality instead of inspected in is another principle. And assure quality all along the way and never pass a bad part or a bad piece of information to the next person in the process. That's a principle. Now, are these principles all going to be, magically adhered to because on Friday you agreed on them and Monday you come in and all of a sudden you've got nirvana? No, of course not. You got to work towards that. Right? I was talking to a couple of colleagues at Toyota, and I asked them the question, with all the tools that are out there today, you've got, single minute exchange of die, TPM, standardized work, problem solving, adjunct level scheduling. What am I missing here? 5S, visual management. Okay, scoot on to OEE, which I despise. I have an episode on that, so go listen to that one. And I said, if you only had to pick two things out of all the things that you could possibly do, what would they be? And they said, problem solving and standard work. Why? Because without a standard, you can't make improvements. Taiyoshi Ono taught us that a long time ago. And problem solving goes back to the notion that you and I that I talked to you about earlier, that what makes a world-class company is their ability to solve problems permanently. So think about it this way. If you create a standard, and I don't care what process it is, you most likely will not be able to produce that standard repeatedly over and over again because of all kinds of different problems that you might have. Let's just talk about manufacturing. It could be machine downtime, bad quality, bad design, poor supplier. Could be all kinds of things, right? So when you don't meet your standard, you prioritize those reasons in some sort of Pareto and start putting your next set of Kaizens around those items. The whole idea is it should help me meet my standard. If it's an administrative process, let's say an accounting process, you got all kinds of errors in accounts payable or, you know, accounts receivable, or order entry, whatever. Prioritize those reasons and fix them permanently. I don't like the word fix. I should have said solve them, okay? Solve them permanently. Do not implement lean or any part of it if it is not helping you improve to your stated standard. And if you don't have a standard, your first job is to create the standard. Problem solving and standard. Now, by the way, when I say standard work, I'm also talking about standardization. Standard work to us old-time lean guys means the traditional standard work in a repetitive process, with the three elements being standardized, standard work sequence, standard work and process, and tack time. Okay. But even aside from that, if you have a standard as to, for example, how to do a changeover, you're supposed to do the changeover in 6 minutes and it's taking you 40 minutes. Why? Let's prioritize the reasons why over the course of time. Let's not look at engineering change notices as a normal thing that happens in our country. Let's look at engineering change notices as a defect, because you never write one when things go right. So let's prioritize why we're writing these ECNs. Is it electrical problems? Is it a certain customer, a certain sales tech that don't know how to take the right information from the customer? Is it a hardware issue? Is it, you know, what is it? Is it software? So, you know, if you can just focus on the standards that are meaningful to you and to your business, and problem solve around the deviations of those processes, you will do yourself a favor and you will find that you will eliminate all this BS that the consulting industry is throwing to you. I'm even talking about putting a yellow line on the floor. If it's not going to help the operator get back to standard, don't put the yellow line on the floor, unless, of course, it's a safety issue. You know, walkways or whatever. Challenge yourself on every single thing you do and ask yourself, is this going to help me be consistent in meeting my standard, whatever that standard may be? And if the answer is no, don't do it. Stay very focused on the basics and learn how to problem solve. My God, that is such a poorly executed thing today in industry. And you know, it's funny, we're talking about problem solving 30, 40 years ago, and now we're still talking about it today. Okay? Focus on the basics. Okay? And just don't listen to people that don't have the experience. And I'm not talking about experience with your industry, you know. Do you have experience with pipelining? I was asked by a CEO one time. They line pipe, these old sewer pipes and these old water pipes that are sitting underneath big cities like New York City. And my answer to him was, that's a foolish question. Of course I have pipelining experience. Who doesn't have that? Just joking around, right? That's not the kind of experience I'm talking about. Your business and your industry, I hate to say it, you think you're different and you think you're special. Okay, yeah, you are different and you're special. But if you're going to sit there and rationalize why this won't work for your industry, then don't even consider attempting this. Because if you say you can't, you will be correct. Your industry should have little to do with implementing lean. And maybe another way to think about it is that If you have waste in your company, then lean applies. And I have not yet. I've been around the world. I've been on six continents and 50 countries, okay? And I've done this all over the globe. I've never yet met, and by the way, dozens of industries. I've never yet met yet one company that didn't have any waste in their industry or their company. Okay. And when you develop a process, be religious to that process. Involve the people that need to be involved in terms of developing the process. If you want to get buy-in, get the people who own the process to develop it. This one client I was just telling you about said, yeah, we have a new product development process, but we take shortcuts sometimes because we have to. I just shook my head. I said, what are you talking about? Well, yeah, sometimes we have to take shortcuts because that just tells me that some consulting firm, big consulting firm, developed their process, didn't bring anybody in on it, and was so out of touch with reality that the people that are running it saying, we ain't doing this. This is not going to work. But they didn't have the environment and the psychological safety to push back and say, this is bull. Just like when people are on Gemba walks every day, wasting an hour and a half of their time every morning of their day, walking around from cell to cell, listening to the same spiel, going over the same numbers. Nobody wants to be called a naysayer, so they won't tell the emperor that he has no clothes. Okay. Okay. Enough about this. I just thought I really want to make 2006 a year to return to basics. And again, like I said to you, return to basics means that you had basics at one time. Many companies have not been there at all. You're the basics. Maybe that's a better title for this. I don't know. Let's make 2026 a year of the basics. Focus on the basics. You will not be disappointed. And I'll leave you with this. You probably heard me say this before in some other presentation. And for my friends internationally, I apologize. I'm going to be using a US football analogy. Our football, not your football, okay? Ours with the funny looking ball. In the NFL, there was a very poor team in the 1960s called the Green Bay Packers. And a coach called Vince Lombardi took over that team. And he ended up winning, geez, I forget how many championships the guy won, 10, 11, 9, 10, 11, I forget. Anyway, with his team, he got them together in the very first practice. He held up a football and said to his team, gentlemen, this is a football. From there, he went on to the basics of tackling, blocking, passing, fundamentals, footwork, all this stuff. Basics, basics, basics. There were no silver bullets. There were no katas involved or Gemba walks or agile or factory 4.0 type things in that industry. He went to the basics and won all the championships. And now the Super Bowl trophy, every year they have the Super Bowl with the best team wins it, right? It's called the Lombardi Trophy, named after him. He did nothing fancy. He focused on the basics. The basics work. So be a Vince Lombardi this year, okay, with your company, and focus on the basics. I know I'm a little bit harsh sometimes on some of this stuff, and I don't mean to put anybody in a bad position, but I see the damage that's being done, and it's not good. It's just not good. And it frustrates me because we should be better than that today. And by the way, I'm not saying I have all the answers, okay? But I do have a pretty good track record of success. And I also made a lot of mistakes, which are equally, I probably value my mistakes more than I do my successes. Okay. So I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I do know one thing. If you don't focus on the basics and you get distracted by all these certifications and all that stuff that's going on, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Okay. All right. Well, Happy New Year, everybody. This is episode 73. Let's make 2026 a year of return to the basics. And we got some pretty good episodes coming up for you come 2026. I've got to get them in the can, as they used to say in Hollywood. But anyway, we got a lot of good topics to talk about. So reach out to me, mark@lead911.com, if you have any questions and or comments. And if you want to share your stories or want me to talk about a particular subject, let me know. I'll be more than happy to do so. Okay. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.